Okay, now for a brief commercial message. Take out this bulletin insert, if you would. You would not be sitting there. I would not be standing here. These folks would not be sitting up there. They would not be singing. You would not have the organ to accompany you. You would not have heat in the winter or cooling in the summer. You would not have Sunday school classes to attend. You would not have room in the inn to volunteer for or the Habitat House to volunteer for. You would not have any of this without your generosity. You make it happen. And every year in the fall, we come with our hand out asking for you once again to estimate what you're going to give for the coming year. Well, this year is no different, except we don't have any fancy slogans. We don't have a campaign per se. We're just expecting you to do the right thing. That's it. So some of you have received letters. We received ours yesterday. And in those letters, to those of you who have estimated your giving before, you will see what you estimated for this year. And we're recommending, if you can, to increase that, perhaps 5%, perhaps 10%. If you can't do that, some percent. And it says November 15th on it, but why don't you just go home and talk about it and go ahead and do it this week? Because if you're like me, if I go ahead and do it now, I'll do it. If I put it off, I'll put it off, and I'll put it off, and I'll put it off, and the deadline will pass, and somebody will be calling you. So just do it this week. There are three ways that you can do this. You know, even if you give regularly and have never estimated your giving for the coming year, you can do that because you have an idea or you think you do what you're going to make next year, right? And you plan according to what you think your salary will be or what your income will be for next year. The church does the same. It helps us out. So, three ways you can do this. First, you can take that card. They should be in the pews, but you also receive them in your letter. You can fill it out. You can turn it in at worship. You can put it in the plate. You can bring it by the church. You can mail it to the church. Second, you can go online and fill out a form on our website saying what you estimate your giving to be next year. And now, for the first time, take out your cell phones. You didn't think you'd ever hear me say that, did you? Take out your cell phones, and right now, you can send a text to 34444, join, and the message in it being Join Weston UMC Estimate. You can read about it here. I tried it this morning, and it works. It takes you to a site. You will receive a text in return that will take you to a site that will give you a very brief form to fill out that won't take any time at all for you to let us know what you hope you can give next year so we can plan what we hope you can do for God in making disciples out there in the world to transform the world. If you want to go ahead and send that text right now, and if you keep your phone out, I'm not going to assume that you're looking at Facebook or sending messages. I'm going to assume that you're tweeting about my sermon. Okay, end of commercial message. I love this story. I just have to tell you, I love the story of the woman at the well. I've known it pretty much all my life. But it still fascinates me. Because you see, Jesus is traveling a straight line between Judea and Galilee. And if you travel a straight line, the shortest distance, you go right through Samaria. Now, some people went around because Samaritans were a part of the larger Jewish family, but several centuries before, they had gotten off track, okay? They had gotten their religion all wrong, and there is no more hateful group of people than a bunch of religious folks who believe that somebody else has gotten their religion all wrong. And so, by the time Jesus came along, Samaritans hated Jews, and Jews hated Samaritans. That would be the general description, okay? But Jesus is traveling through Samaria, and he stops at Jacob's well. Now, this is the well of the ancestor of both Samaritans and Jews, and anyone hearing this story from that time would know that wells are where you go to meet women. It's true. Look at all the patriarchs who meet their wives by going to wells. Right? So Jesus is at this well, and he's about to meet a woman. But it has nothing to do with romance. He's sitting there, and he sees her coming in the distance. It's about noon. And he may have been a bit surprised, because women came to the well in the morning. They came to the well in the evening. Often those were the unmarried daughters of families who came to carry water, which is why it was a good place to meet women of marriageable age, perhaps as young as 12 in that day and time. But he sees her coming in the middle of the day, and he knows what she is. She is a Samaritan. She is part of a group that got his religion all wrong. She's a woman. He's not supposed to be conversing with her. She is not related to him. He is not related to her in a close family relationship. But typical of Jesus, what does he do? He speaks to her. He asks for a drink. And she's shocked by it because she knows what he is. He is a Jewish male. And he should not be doing what he's doing. She said, "What are you, a Jew, doing speaking to me? Because we don't even share the same utensils." He said, "If you knew who was speaking to you, you would know that I could give you living water that never runs out. You drink this water, you'll get thirsty again. You drink the water I have, you will never be thirsty again." Now see, Jesus in the Gospel of John is a poet. He's always speaking in figurative language, and people are always taking him literally, getting it wrong, and so he has to explain. He does that with Nicodemus. He does it with his disciples. Well, the same thing happens with the Samaritan woman. She said, "Now, how are you going to get water out of this well? You don't even have a jug to pull it up with." He has to explain that the water he's talking about is the water of life that does not end. And she's still not quite getting that. Why is this Jewish man talking so strangely to this Samaritan woman? They each know what the other one is, and that this is technically an illicit conversation. And then Jesus asked this very strange thing of her. He says, "Go and call your husband. Bring him back." She answers very simply, "I have no husband." Which is true, just not the whole truth. And Jesus said, "You have spoken honestly. You have spoken correctly. You have had 5 husbands. And the man to whom you're married presently is not your husband." Now, it's interesting. Given that one little interchange, across the centuries in Christian teaching, this woman has been considered a sinful woman. But notice, Jesus never calls her a sinful woman. He never offers her forgiveness. She never asks for forgiveness. I think this is a woman more sinned against than sinning. It was pretty easy for a man to divorce his wife in that day and time. Not so much for a woman. It was much more difficult, if not impossible in certain cultures, for her to divorce her husband. One of the primary reasons a man would divorce his wife would be if she could not have children, specifically sons. My guess is this woman is unable to have children. So she's been passed from man to man to man to man to man until finally, knowing she can't have sons, some man has taken her in and allows her to carry the water back and forth from the well. She goes in the middle of the day so she doesn't have to hear the ugly comments of the others who have come to get water about her not being able to have children, about no man wanting her. I don't think this is a sinful woman at all. I think this is a woman who has been hurt by a system that degrades and diminishes women because of their childbearing capacity. When Jesus tells her the deepest truth of her life, and she knows that he knows that about her and doesn't reject her, something happens. All of a sudden, he doesn't know what she is anymore. You see, by calling her a sinful woman, we turn her back into a what? No, he knows who she is. He knows that she comes in the middle of the day because she's anxious about going in the morning or in the evening and meeting those other people who will say ugly things. He knew she was anxious about seeing a Jewish man sitting at the well. She was anxious about a Jewish man speaking to her at all. But now he's told her the deepest truth of her life. And guess what? He's getting ready to tell her the deepest truth of his life as well. She says, I know you must be a prophet. You would know these things if you weren't. And I know that one is coming that we have hoped for, a Messiah, hoped for by the Samaritans, hoped for by the Jews. And you can almost hear Jesus whispering it. I am he. Now, John has already told us that Jesus is the word God spoke at the beginning of creation. We have already heard that Jesus is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. But now Jesus is telling a Samaritan woman, a person who could not be more different than himself, the deepest truth of his life. He is the chosen one of God. And then he sends her to share that news with other people. She becomes the very first preacher of the gospel. If you have friends in other denominations who tell you women shouldn't be preachers, you refer them to this story. Jesus ordained a Samaritan woman. So Jesus also, in this story, I think, gives us an example of how we deal with people who are radically different from ourselves. Now, in his time and in our time, the typical way you deal with someone who is different is that you distance yourself from them. You get away from them. You live in a different part of town. You segregate yourself from other people who may have different skin colors, different languages, different backgrounds, different sexual orientations, different political views, whatever difference. And you just hang around with all the people who are like you, which is great fun because you can tell each other how great you are, pat each other on the back, sing kumbaya. I mean, it's wonderful, isn't it? But you don't grow that way. And what you do with those people who are different from you is you caricature them. Yeah, we know what those old, long, white-bearded preachers are like. They are all like that. I hope not. Poor souls, if they're all like me. Yeah, we know what women are like. We know what men are like. You know what those African Americans are like. You know what those refugees are like. You know what those immigrants are like. You know what, but we don't know who. And we caricature them. And we create an image for them which is not true to them, but is a protection for us, a way of keeping our distance. And so what we do is we learn to disdain and look down upon people who are different from us for whatever reason. In fact, as in the case of Jews and Samaritans, it sometimes becomes okay in a culture to hate those persons. But let me suggest a more better way based on what Jesus taught us in this encounter. First of all, he and the woman are not keeping their distance. They come together at Jacob's well. They speak to each other and they listen to each other. At first, they know what the other is, a Jewish man, a Samaritan woman. But as they tell their stories, as Jesus tells the deepest truth of her life and she acknowledges it, as he tells her the deepest truth of his calling in his life, and she goes and takes that message into her village, all of a sudden, they can't caricature each other. He can't just be another Jewish man. She can't just be another Samaritan woman. They have actually spoken to each other and listened deeply to the truth of their lives. And when you do that, you can no longer stereotype people. And in that process, they learn to respect each other. Dare I say, this in itself is a form of love. It goes beyond respect. It's that love which is a policy of treating people the way we would want to be treated. And so Jesus gives us the example. That's the way he treats the Samaritan woman. But that is also the way he treats Nicodemus. That's the way he treats his disciples. That's the way he treats Pilate. When Pilate examines him, that's the way he treats the people who drive spikes through his hands and nail him to a cross. That's the way Jesus deals with everyone. He will not keep his distance. He will not caricature people, even Roman soldiers. And he will offer respect in the hope that it teaches others to offer it back. Throughout his entire life, this is the way Jesus dealt with people. And so, we have the ideal example of how we encounter persons with differences. Out in the world, they may tell you it's okay to keep your distance. It's okay to live in your little enclave and never associate with those people, whoever those people are. Out in the world, they'll tell you it's okay to caricature other people, not based on who they are, but based on some kind of mythical creation that you've made around them or about them. Out in the world, they will say it's okay to disdain certain people. It's okay to hate certain people. But that is not what Jesus does or says. Jesus says you've got to get close. You've got to listen. And when you tell the deepest truth of your lives, which is exactly what has been happening in these caring moments every week, when you tell the deepest truth of your lives to each other, you can no longer stereotype and caricature. You have to see that person for the unique gift of God that they are. And each of us is a unique gift of God. Even though we may have something in common with larger groups, each of us has our uniqueness planted in our lives by the Creator of the universe. And when we tell each other our deepest hurts, our deepest joys, our hopes, our sorrows, then we become real to each other. And that opens the possibility of respect, and it opens the possibility of love, not as a feeling, not as something schmaltzy, but as a policy for living. So the choice is ours. Do we go the way of the world, or do we go the way of Jesus? Pretty clear to me.